I move from dreamer to dreamer, from dream to dream, hunting for what I need, slipping and sliding and flickering through dreams, and the dreamer will wake and wonder why this dream seemed different, wonder how real their lives can truly be. From the comic book The Sandman, Seasons of Mists, number 22, episode 1, written by Neil Gaiman in 1990. I'm Nikki Brooks, and welcome to Within a Dream. Neil Gaiman wrote an epic comic book series beginning in 1989. Well, technically 1988, in case any fabulous comic book nerds are listening, called The Sandman. Its main character is called Dream. Actually, he has many names other than Dream. And the name that is used the most is Morpheus. He is considered the ruler of the Dream World. You know, kind of like the Sandman. Picture a man that's not really a man, but he looks like one. Kind of. He's tall and thin, his skin as white as bone, his hair as black as night, and his eyes, where a sparkle might be seen on a human in perfect light, Dream has stars that can change color depending on his mood. However, his appearance can change at will, depending on who is seeing him. In Gaiman's series, Dream is part of what's called the Endless. And the Endless are a group of seven siblings, which, aside from Dream, include Destiny, Death, Destruction, Desire, Despair, and Delirium, each the ruler of their namesakes. But the nature and reasoning behind the Endless is never really explained, except that while they are just natural forces that have always been, older than the gods and other supernatural beings, maybe they just simply are. Maybe they are what they are. Dreams and death and destruction and so on. Each of the Endless has their own realm in which they rule over. Dreams is naturally called the Dreaming. It is the world where people go to dream. It is an immense land with the landscape changing from place to place. It has many notable landmarks throughout the series, but one in particular are the gates of Ivory and Horn. The dreams that pass through Ivory are lies, and the dreams that pass through Horn is truth. Dream carved these gates himself. The bulk of this series follows Dream. It starts out with Dream being captured by a magician seeking immortality, and he mistakenly takes Dream for his brother Death, and the magician, fearing retribution, keeps Dream imprisoned. When finally, after 70 years, Dream is able to escape, but not before punishing his captor with a constant, never-ending series of nightmares. Dream is acutely aware of his past cruelty toward others. And after his imprisonment, he spends much of the entire series attempting to atone for his behavior and right his wrongs. He always maintains a sense of darkness, sort of your tragic hero. As one character close to Dream named Mervin said, he's got to be the tragic figure standing out in the rain, mourning the loss of his beloved. So down comes the rain right on cue. In the meantime, everybody gets dreams full of existential angst and wakes up feeling like hell. And we all get wet. But before Gaiman Sandman, a separate Morpheus appeared in the Marvel Universe by way of a comic called Moon Knight in 1981. Think of Moon Knight as a crime-fighting superhero with multiple personality disorder, like Tyler Durden from Fight Club, and Morpheus as his foe. Before Morpheus became Morpheus, he was Robert Markham of New York City. And as such the Marvel Universe goes, he developed a bizarre viral infection that affected the way his DNA replicates. He consulted a doctor who prescribed him an experimental drug, but the drug ended up having a negative reaction with his DNA. And ultimately, it caused Markham to develop a monster-like appearance, and in which he also lost the ability to sleep. Once Markham began to understand what this meant, he also discovered this new ability. The lack of sleep allowed him to build up a sort of destructive energy, and he called it Ebon energy. And with it, he could send nightmares to people. With the intent of seeking revenge on the doctor who made him this way, he draws the attention of Moon Knight, who ultimately defeats him. But perhaps you're not a comic book reader. So you might know the name Morpheus best by his Hollywood appearance in the 1999 movie The Matrix. He's played perfectly by Lawrence Fishburne, and he's the one who infamously asks Neo if he wants the blue pill to forget the Matrix exists and continue to live in the world of illusion, or if he wants the red pill to accept the painful truth and live in this new reality. So really, to dream or not to dream. What's interesting here is the creators of the Matrix franchise actually instructed Fishburne to base his character off of Neil Gaiman's Sandman. So why the lesson in pop culture? What does any of this have to do with dreams and the true mythology of Morpheus? Well, it doesn't, really. But then again, it actually does. This is a fantastic example of how folklore starts. Imagine 1,000 years into the future and someone finds a copy of Gaiman's Sandman buried in a time capsule. Would his tale be taken strictly as fiction? Or would the future see it as a continuation of the ancient Greek mythology? It's impossible to say, but something tells me that it's deeply rooted in human nature to hold on to the written word, be it fiction or otherwise. After all, we have texts written on stone tablets that people live their lives by. And here we are in 2016, thousands of years after the myth of Morpheus, still creating ideas and stories around him. So why Morpheus? Who is this guy that has become such an inspiration to sort of dark tellings in the modern day world? Well, let's dig into it. To the Greeks, Morpheus was the god of dreams. He is usually described as having dark wings, so as to fly from dream to dream quickly. And as a daemon, which is neither man nor actual demon, but more of a godlike spirit, usually felt but unseen. Morpheus could do just what his name implies. He could morph a mortal's form and appear as such to dreamers. But it wasn't just the human form he could morph into. He could also mimic their voice, their stature and gait, their mood, their clothes, and even their choice and delivery of words. Because of this, Morpheus was asked by the gods on many occasions to send messages to the mortal kings. For example, in 8th century AD, a Roman poet named Ovid wrote an epic poem called Metamorphosis. It consisted of 15 books that chronicled the history of the world, starting with creation and up through Julius Caesar. Included in this epic was the story of Morpheus. And the way Ovid tells it, Morpheus was chosen to deliver a message to a woman who was awaiting her husband's return from sea. He visited her dream, took on the form of her husband, naked, pale, and wet from the sea. He stood at her bedside weeping and told her in her husband's voice that he was dead. He had died at sea during a hurricane. Devastated and in disbelief, she ran to the shore of the ocean and discovered her husband's body, as dead as Morpheus told her. Refusing to live without him, she ran into the sea, was carried away by the waves, and drowned. To understand Morpheus a bit more, we must first understand his family. His father was Hypnos, the god of sleep. Morpheus had siblings, thousands, if you believe Ovid's tellings, but the two directly connected to dreams were Phobithor and Phantasos, each bearing their own set of dark wings. Phobithor, like Morpheus, could change his form, but instead of mimicking humans, he mimics animals. Frightening animals. You see, he is the personification of nightmares. And Phantasos, like his brothers, could also mimic different forms, only his chosen form was that of inanimate objects like stones, earth, water, wood. The dreams he dealt to mortals, though, were of the surreal and fantasy kind. The three brothers together make up what's called the Onnery, meaning the dreams. Morpheus is considered its leader. Each night, the Onnery passed through one of two gates, Ivory and Horn. To pass through the Ivory Gate would bring the dreamer dreams that were nonsensical and without meaning. But to pass through the Horned Gate would bring a dream that is true, and sometimes prophetic. Sound familiar? It should. Red or blue, Neo? Or with Game and Sandman, it's exactly the same. These gates have been mentioned hundreds of times throughout the ages. Homer mentions it in the Odyssey. A much earlier Roman poet than Ovid named Virgil mentions it in his epic. Plato, Socrates, Alexander Pope, T.S. Eliot, H.P. Lovecraft, they have all mentioned these gates. It's clear that the imprint that has been left by Morpheus and his Onnery have proven insurmountable. A myth so rich with symbolism and color, the imagination can see it almost clearly. It has enough mystery and intrigue that it has inspired centuries upon centuries of poets and philosophers, writers and artists, doctors and scientists. As for the question of dreams, though, Morpheus tells us it has nothing to do with ourselves. Rather, it's given to us, whether we want it or not. I was just a little girl, maybe 7 or 8, standing on the bank of a river. It was night, rain was pouring down, lightning was crashing all around, thunder was booming off the hills around me, and the river was rapidly rising. I could hear screams of panic all around me. People were running everywhere. In front of me was a bridge, one of those Indiana Jones-type bridges made of wood and rope. It was swaying back and forth in the wind, getting battered by the rain, and I knew I had to cross it. On the other side of that bridge, on the other bank of the river, were Native American teepees. And I knew that one of them was my home. Without thinking, without looking around me, I stepped onto the bridge. Clutching the wooden railing with one foot in front of the other, I walked, fighting against the wind of the storm and the rain slapping my face. I made it halfway across when I heard screams coming from right in front of me. There, at the other end of the bridge, was my mother. She looked absolutely terrified, so I shouted at her that I was okay. Then, as she kept on screaming, she pointed past me to the other side of the river. I looked back and I saw that it was on fire. And the bridge that I was standing on was catching at the other end. I looked back at my mother, shouted that everything was going to be okay, and then I fell into the flooded waters of the river. And then I woke up. I had this dream when I was 12, and I remember it so well because it was the first dream I had had that ever inspired me to write it down. I wrote a poem about it, and now, 20-some-odd years later, I found it in an old chest at my dad's house. And what's interesting about this dream is the little girl wasn't actually me. And that does it for Within a Dream Episode 2. Keep sending me your dreams at dreams@withinadreampod.com. I will read them during the dream sequence at the end of every show every week. New episodes are set to drop on Mondays for right now. Check out our website for more information and for links to our Twitter and Facebook. The link is www.withinadreampod.com, and I will make sure to put that in the show notes. If you liked the show, please get on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever platform you found us on and leave a review. Reviews are the best way to keep the podcast alive. Within a Dream is written and produced by yours truly, Nikki Brooks. Mixing and music by my talented husband, Aaron Brooks. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, sleep well.